Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointsTC.
The last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
Our next guest has written a book which no woman should actually have to write, and nobody should have to go through the experience that she went through. I have to warn people that, particularly if you've young ears in the kitchen or in the car with you, that some of this may be quite distressing, but it also is, I think, something that's very, very important for people of all ages to listen to and to understand. Blondin Raleigh has written her book, Aftermath. Thank you very much for taking the time to join us. And I suppose just to get to it, the aftermath of what?
The aftermath of rape, yeah. So the aftermath of a trial, a court case, and the aftermath, I suppose, of the effects of sexual violence on somebody's life really is where the aftermath bit came from.
There's so much to this, and we'll go through various aspects of it. I am fascinated, though, as well, that you did decide to actually, you could have remained anonymous, but you took a decision not to be anonymous at the end of a successful conviction of the perpetrator.
Yeah, that was sort of something I had decided quite early on, like before even a trial was in question. I just always said, if I get him to court, I'm naming him, I don't care. I need people to know what he's done. And then sort of within the wait for a trial, I kind of had spent so long researching cases, trying to find comfort and trying to find, I suppose, the happy ending in all of this, you know, and I found it so lonely. Like, there was nobody I felt that was my age in the same stage of their life going through the same thing. Now, look, I know there's so many people going through the same thing, but there was nobody I could relate to. There was nobody that I could actually physically see a picture of or a name and just get some comfort and think they might understand this. And I thought, if I can sort of share my story for that alone and give somebody in the middle of the night when they're up all night, you know, can't sleep or whatever, some form of comfort of, well, there's a girl like me and her attacker is in prison or she understood how I felt or whatever. Thought, well, at least that's something. It's something good out of a really rubbish situation.
You're from Mullingar, County Westmeath. So was your attacker. During the period between the attack and between his conviction, how well known do you think was the story of what had happened around Mullingar?
I don't think it was known at all, to be honest. And I always kind of wonder how, because, you know, in these small towns, everybody knows everything. And like, there would have been cases afterwards and stuff that I would have heard of that were going on or whatever. But I genuinely think he managed to keep it dead silent. Very, very few people knew anything about it. There wasn't whispers of anything. There wasn't rumours. It was just totally swept under the carpet.
Do you mind if we go back to the night when you were assaulted, when you were raped?
Yeah.
You were 21 years of age?
Yeah, 21.
And you were back from college at home in Mullingar, but you went to Galway for a night out with friends.
Yeah, the arts festival was on and we had kind of spent the summer going out in Mullingar and we thought, oh, we'll go somewhere different. It was a really sunny day and we went up to Galway. We were late enough heading up, but I remember getting to Galway and the streets were just packed and, you know, it was the most typical night out you could, like, young person night out, you know. And yeah, we just sort of had the most typical night. There was drinks going, there was chatting, you know, like if you could write an Irish night out. Some of the girls went home with boys. Some girls went home, they were too drunk, they had to go home. Some of the lads had to go home. You know, it was just your typical disaster, you know, like just good fun. And we all kind of blended groups. We met a group of people from, well, two of them were from Mullingar and we got chatting with them and, you know, they knew people we knew and all this. So there was a group of maybe 12 people kind of around tables and that. And we ended up going back to a house party at an Airbnb. And that's sort of where the night went from your very typical average night to really not typical, just nightmare, really.
The perpetrator, the man who was found guilty, Jonathan Moran, known as Johnny Moran. Had you known him in Mullingar?
I would have known of him. Like, I would have known who he was. He played rugby with my brother, so I kind of would have known who he was. Would have known him to say hello. Like, that was it. I don't think I'd ever had a conversation with him really before that night. But friends I was with that night knew him and played rugby with him and that kind of stuff. So that's sort of how the kind of connection was made, I suppose. But no, I wouldn't have known him very well.
I'm not going to go into the details of the assault, but I am very interested in what happened afterwards, because you left the house. Tell us about managing to get away from the house and how you were at that stage.
Yeah, so the assault took place in a shed, in a locked shed in the back of the house. So luckily, two guys from the house had come downstairs from the party, whatever, from bed for a cigarette. And once I heard them talking, I was able to get out of the shed. I was able to knock and they let me out. And when I got out first, I was extremely calm. I was very composed and I just wanted to get out of there. Like, I just needed to get out of the house. So I went back into the house from the garden, sort of noticed I had injuries, noticed I was bleeding, and thought, like, I can't stay here any longer. So I just picked up my stuff and left and just walked through the streets until I sort of found light and sort of some movement. So you're talking about 5, 6 o'clock in the morning at this stage. And I sat down on the windowsill of a shop, and I, at this stage, after leaving the house, I was just distraught. There was no composure, there was nothing. I was so upset. And I suppose the shock had sort of started. I was shaken, and this girl sat down beside me. They were coming out of a casino, and she sat down beside me. She noticed how upset I was, and she's kind of like, "Are you okay?" And I was like, "Yeah, I just can't find my friends." And she's like, "Ah, like, don't worry." You know, she was still on a buzz from her night out. And she kind of sat with me for a little while, and some people kind of came and went. And there was a guy with her, and he kept saying, "Something's not right. You're like, I think you need to go to the guards." And I was like, "No, I just want to go back to my friends." And he was like, "No, I think something's after happening. I think you need to go to the guards."
Very perceptive of him.
Yeah, he just picked up on, I suppose, how upset I was, and what I was saying was wrong, just wasn't matching. He just knew there was something, and he walked him, another guy and a girl walked me to the Garda station in Galway. And the girl stayed with me for a few hours that morning, and then the two guys went. I never saw them again. But yeah, so I was in the Garda station, I think, by 6 or 7 o'clock that morning.
Which was probably very fortunate, wasn't it, when it came to actually being able to secure a conviction, because by telling them what had happened, they were able to get evidence quickly.
Yeah, like, they were able to put me into the car and drive me around to find the house I was after coming from. They were able to, you know, secure the house. Nothing had changed in the house. Everybody was still asleep, so no evidence had been gotten rid of. Nothing had been moved. It was literally like as I had left it, which was huge. It meant I got to the sexual assault treatment unit within hours, you know, for DNA kind of swabs and stuff like that, which again is huge. When it came to trial, it was massive. And the benefits of being, of getting there so early, you know, was just invaluable, really.
Now, in the time we have, and I'm conscious that people can get the full story in the book, Aftermath, there are a couple of things that I want to focus on. One being the extraordinary length of time that it took before you actually got justice. Because to have this hanging over you, what was it, 5 years before the trial reached an actual conclusion?
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know. COVID was to play a little bit, but I kind of feel it's unfair saying COVID was to play, because there's people now in the same position and they're still waiting 5 years.
Yeah.
There's no urgency with these things. And It's kind of just a we'll get you when we get you. But like your life is totally on hold. Your life, you know, you can't really heal because there's an uncertainty to it. You know, will they be found guilty? Will they not? Will they, you know, all of these things. So you can do a certain amount of healing, but not an awful lot. It's still so open. So yeah, and I'd get a court date and it'd be pushed out. There wouldn't be enough judges or there wouldn't be enough courtrooms or something. And every time you think, this is it, like once this is over, at least that'll be this part done. I won't have to dread that. You know, I used to like replay in my head, okay, and what time did we get to the bar and what did I have to drink? I was studying for this trial and it was going on for years and years, and I get to the date and then it'll be pulled away from me. And it was just like somebody just taking the legs from under you all over again. But yeah, 5 years, it was cruel, really.
Because it's also very clear from the book that you were severely traumatised by what happened to you. And I think that's probably the most shocking thing for anyone who hasn't an experience of the consequences of rape, the trauma that you experienced. It just took all of your confidence at the very least, wasn't it?
Yeah, it just took everything, to be honest. Like, you know, massive things like your confidence, your self-worth, but like really small, basic things as well, like being able to shower, being able to go out for a run on your own, you know, even the television I watched. I used to just rewatch things that I had watched before because I knew what happened. I knew there was no violence in it. You know, your tolerance for violence, your tolerance for everything like that just goes. So like I'd rewatch Desperate Housewives again and again because I knew what happened. Or I'd watch 24 Hours in Police Custody because I knew the bad guy would be caught. You know, all these really small little things that it just impacts every part of your life, you know, and the major things, the things you used to love to do, the things you used to like about yourself, you know, going out, things like that, all of that is gone. But all those little small bits, eventually you're just, you don't recognize the person anymore. It's a totally different life that you're living. You're just grieving that old life and just craving that normality, like all the time.
And even going back to college, it delayed qualifying as a teacher for you, didn't it?
Yeah, and I just, like, I wasn't able for it. I wasn't able to work for a year or two after. I'd go to work and then I'd come out for a few months because I just wasn't able for it. It just took over my whole life. Like, I couldn't sleep. I was on antidepressants. I was on, you know, Xanax, you name it, anything to try and help. And I was just in this rut. It completely took over my life.
The positive that I see from it, though, was that your family were terrific, weren't they? Your parents and your brothers.
Yeah.
That they couldn't have been more supportive or understanding, could they?
Oh, they were just brilliant. Like, I know everybody thinks their family is brilliant and everyone's family is brilliant, but they just rallied around me and they picked me up more times. You know, they kept me going. Their whole focus for those 5 years was keep her going, get her to that court, get her. They knew I wanted that conviction so bad, so they just did anything to get me there. And I think the trial had a huge effect on them. It was extremely traumatizing to them. You know, they were exposed with all this imagery of what had happened to me. They watched CCTV of my night out. You know, they were confronted with a lot of what had happened to me at that stage. And I think, you know, that's still having a massive effect on them now. But they, for those 5 years, they just really did everything to keep me going.
Planet, I wonder how many women don't go and report to An Garda Síochána, or if they do go and report to An Garda Síochána, get discouraged in continuing a case because of the length of time it takes.
It's huge. Like, and every part of you blames yourself for what you've done. So even to get to the door of the Garda station is a massive battle, you know. Never mind actually reporting it, never mind pursuing it with the DPP, any of that kind of thing. But like, we know less than 3% of sexual assaults are reported. Like, you know, so then take, that's only 3%. Take what actually gets convictions. It's huge to try and even get it there. But those people are living with the same trauma that I lived with. They're living with the same struggle that I lived with every day. You know, their journey through it is no different to mine. And I, like, I'd love to say everybody should report it. And that's just not an option for everybody. You know, there's people's family situations, different, you know, different dynamics and stuff that some people have no interest in reporting what has happened. But like, I'd love for the people who want to report it to try and stick with it, because it's like an awful lot of time, but in the end it is worth it. It just gives you that little bit of power back, you know.
How are you now? Because one of the things I was reading is that it may seem like a small thing, but it's very significant that you were able to go to Electric Picnic and enjoy it.
Yeah, yeah. I found the last few months I have made huge progress. I suppose I have the freedom now, you know. He's not around. He's not there. I don't fear him.
He's
now
going to be in prison for 8 years. Yeah. Well, that's the sentence.
Well, he'll probably be in prison for about 6. But that's a huge freedom. And going to Electric Picnic and not worrying about everybody around me. And I still, I'm getting that freedom back. But I still have massive struggles. And I still wake up some days and just feel sad that it happened. And sad of, you know, why was it me? But I'm just enjoying the freedom of life again.
So well written. Niall Kelly worked with you on the book. Yeah. And it's a story that's unfortunate that you have to tell it. But it's great to hear that you are coming through the other side and writing the book. Hopefully it's helped that, has it?
Yeah, it was massively therapeutic. And Niall was just amazing to work with. You know, and we wanted the male perspective in the writing process. And I think, you know, it's worked quite well. I might be a little bit biased, but I find it very, really, really therapeutic writing it.
Blondish Rally, thank you for telling us about Aftermath.
The last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
Hey football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.